Microsoft 101 is a Microsoft documentary series that takes you behind the scenes of some of our most influential products and people. What you're about to watch is the story behind Visual Studio. You will hear from those that were there at the beginning and those that are taking us into the future. With some never-before-seen footage and barely believable stories, this is an in-depth look into the core and soul of how Visual Studio came to be. Now, the full-length documentary will air in two parts, beginning here with part one and part two to air next week. After that, for the next 11 weeks, we will air each interview in its entirety for an even deeper look. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the journey back in time and into the future of Visual Studio.
Programming languages go back at least 50 years. You can look all the way back to the 50s where some of the ancient languages like Fortran and COBOL were created. Microsoft itself was founded on the programming language called BASIC. The first product literally that the company created was Microsoft BASIC.
When Bill started the company, his first product was a BASIC interpreter. Was a language product, was a tool. Right from day one, we've always been thinking about Microsoft as a platform company.
People were writing the classic BASIC for Apple IIe. You're at a command prompt and you type line numbers 10, print my name, line number 20, go to line number 10, so you'd see your name printed constantly. And, you know, that was the coolest thing people had seen at the time.
I think BASIC is an absolutely terrible language. It's a language that has always been terrible. It is nothing more than Fortran with a dress on it, and it's a language that should be dragged outside and shot. It's not good.
Whenever anybody else in the software industry wanted to know where we thought things were going, you know, they'd come and talk to us. Because our vision, we shared. We didn't view that as some competitive edge. We just wanted to talk about it and get other people to share the same ideas so that they would help make it all come true.
In the late 1980s, Microsoft had a giant dominant product. It was MS-DOS. This is green screen operating system. It was the franchise. And they knew that it was going to have to go away. And they knew that they were going to have to replace it with something. But then Microsoft and IBM got together to build the successor operating system. It was called OS2. And it was this enormous production. And it was the anointed heir apparent within Microsoft. It was considered a product of strategic value, and it was given the lion's share of the new development resources that was going on. I mean, it was huge. And in the meantime, off in one corner, they had this tiny little kind of runt of the litter named Windows that was not a strategic application, was not part of the strategic department within the organization. At the time, Bill was very, very frustrated with IBM. He didn't like working with them. He didn't like their architectural style. He was very forthcoming in his frustration of working with IBM. We think today of Windows as this enormous thing, this huge marketing success, this huge dominant operating system that's on every computer out there. And at the time, it was simply not true. At the time, there were many competing windowing systems, and there were several competing operating systems. There were no clear winners. And what happened was Windows 3.0 came out and broke the 640K barrier. And it did so with a lighter touch than OS2 did. It really stole the thunder from OS2. And Gates knew it, and Gates ended up cutting IBM loose and saying, take OS2, go, take it and go.
Our strategy can be summarized in one word, Windows.
The thing about Windows back in the early days was it was an enormous tease. It hit its technical marks, but it was such a piece of crap when you had to use it. I mean, it was the kind of software that only a mother could love.
When Windows 3.1 came out, it revolutionized the OS.
It was obvious that the idea of some graphical user interface was going to work.
Everyone adopted it quickly. The trick was we never had a graphical operating system, so the concepts we learned in school in programming didn't apply to what we're using on these PCs.
They call me the father of Visual Basic because I invented the visual part of Visual Basic that you see on screen, the direct manipulation stuff, the dynamically expandable palette of controls that allows you to paint an interface. The proper shell for Windows didn't really exist, and there was no way you could create one shell for Windows that would satisfy everybody. What you needed was a way for people to build their own shells. You needed a shell construction set, and that was kind of the aha moment, the epiphany that allowed me to build Ruby. I called it Tripod in its first incarnation. The Tripod prototype was basically the program that I wrote in order to demonstrate that this cool new visual direct manipulation program could be written. And I showed that to a lot of people in the industry, and they all said the same thing to me. They said, boy, this is pretty nice. Why don't you show this to Microsoft? I'm thinking, yeah, right. Like, Microsoft would care about something like this. Bill had these guys that we called them Gates clones, who were just like him, you know, and they would talk just like him, and they had all of his mannerisms. They looked just like him too. It's amazing. And finally, we got an interview with one of these guys. I started giving my standard demo, you know, and so I started going through. About 5 minutes into it, he stops and he just pushes it back in the chair, and he's, Bill's got to see this. I had done some really cool drag and drop stuff, and where you go over to a palette and pick up a control and drag it onto a window and drop it, and the control would instantiate, and then you could rubber band a line from that control to another control, and the two would be connected, and you could wire them together and when you dragged something across the screen, it dragged across in true animation, so it was actually doing full clipping in the background on a 386. I mean, this was pretty sophisticated stuff for back then. I mean, it was hack code. It was not the kind of stuff that you could ship. But Bill looked at it and he goes, when I showed him this animation for the first time, he goes, "How did you do that?" I loved it. So I looked at him and I gave him the only answer I could. I said, "It's magic."
If you wanted quickly executing code, or you wanted to do something that was very complex and needed a power in the language, you would use C. If you wanted ease of access, you would use BASIC. And then we started to see windowing operating systems appearing. And so as people wanted to build these graphical applications, they started having to do a lot of work to get these done.
When I originally sold this application to Bill Gates in 88, it was going to be the shell for Windows. And it was going to be user-facing, and it had a very, very simple language that I put into it.
And so we introduced a product that was codenamed Thunder that eventually became Visual Basic. And it kicked off the whole market behind rapid application development.
Much to my surprise, a year or so later, Visual Basic appeared in the marketplace to great critical acclaim and commercial success.
If you are going for the best, team up with a winner.
Visual Basic is the fastest way to build applications, bar none. The idea is simple. You take the language that you already understand, English, and you make it simple for people to graphically build drag and drop applications visually.
One of the most interesting things about Visual Basic 1.0 was that you could actually sort of draw pictures to describe what you wanted done, or you could just kind of draw what you wanted on the screen and the code would magically sort of be in the back, and then you could hook it together how you want it. So it was, at the time, it was called visual programming.
But it just made it easy where anybody could build a simple Windows application. And Windows applications really took off from that perspective.
That was really what Visual Basic introduced, was the opportunity to take it from the CS arena, from this place where it seemed like you should wear a white lab coat and you should have all this training. You should be able to code these things and do things during a very strict methodology. It made it so you could say, look, I've got a business problem that I need to have solved, and look, this tool's simple enough that I can solve it.
People could just build applications in a couple hours and help them do their job better, and it was all about productivity.
VB really revolutionized the application development platform because it enabled the masses. And still, you could argue to this day that VB.net has enabled gazillions of programmers around the world to build software.
It's a very different thing from what I had originally set it out to be. And so, you know, I tell the story, it's like sending your son off to college and he comes back graduating with honor summa cum laude and a sex change operation. And you have to go, well, you know, that's my boy, I mean my girl. You know, you kind of have to take your pride in their accomplishments. And so I am the father of Visual Basic, regardless of its gender.
So I remember coming to Microsoft in 92 because my product fit on a floppy and I could compile it on the machine. I loved that. That was really kind of cool.
It was a very interesting environment. You know, being a Microsoft employee in the early 90s and the late 90s, you know, being at Microsoft wasn't really a career choice so much as it was a lifestyle statement.
Back in the early 90s, Microsoft was a totally different company. You know, they didn't have 100,000 employees. Certainly there were thousands, but it was an entrepreneurial company. There was no process, there was no compliance.
There would be times when I would basically leave at 4:35 o'clock in order to, you know, see my family or something. And literally as soon as we had dinner or whatever, I would stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd go write another 300-400 lines of code.
You know, a lot of us were single. We would go out and there'd be a lot of, you know, you would work your 15 hours and then you'd finish up and say, okay, meet me at the bar.
Back then, Microsoft was an androgynous type of place. You didn't get married, you didn't have kids, you didn't have any other life but software. Shoot, the Microsoft millionaires ruined Redmond, Washington by buying homes overpriced and never even going to them.
No one ever complained about the investment of time and effort.
Frankly, I've pulled more all-nighters working at Microsoft than I ever did when I was in university.
I ended up at Microsoft as a fluke, that I was working for a senator who sexually molested some people, or allegedly molested some people.
Allegedly. Scandal brought Marty to Microsoft.
This was a really interesting transitional time, because there was no way that Microsoft could provide all of the support that was needed.
The culture was very technical. People were very focused on the product.
The thing that I think is often overlooked is that Microsoft realized that they needed community around these products.
They wanted us to come on board to bring that people aspect, and what they really wanted us to do was create a developer community. And so we were even anomalies back then, because we were just, you know, we were there having fun, and it was all about make a developer community and make them happy and help them to be successful.
There was no dev community back then. I mean, let's give Microsoft credit for creating a developer ecosystem.
What made it possible for us was we were just allowed to do whatever we wanted to do.
I remember, just breaking the rule, like no rules, or if there were rules, we like ignore them.
One of the things that I'll remember most about working with Dee Dee is she had acquired this gadget that made a farting noise, and she put it in people's offices.
Well, Dee Dee, she's really the devious one. I'm an innocent victim in all of this.
Of course.
And so when you were in the middle of an interview, with doing a recruiting interview, this thing would start going off like crazy, incredibly embarrassing, as you can imagine.
No, that was
nobody told us that you couldn't do that.
You knew the farting thing was in your room after you started hearing these farting noises, and you very quickly realized it wasn't the other person. You knew that Dee Dee was off and doing her thing.
One time we kind of crashed their conference, and we paid the maids to put our materials in every hotel room. Our PR agency found out and went to Bill and said, you should fire them all. They should be fired. This was a long time ago. And what's funny is we ultimately got this piece of email from Bill that said something along the lines of, I can't remember it, I should have saved it, that was basically, if you do this again, next time, don't get caught.
It's a more rounded company now. There's more balance. You don't see people sleeping in their offices anymore. I don't have to negotiate fist fights in the hallway anymore. There's no pushing or shoving or screaming at each other, at least that I see.
You know, now the corporation is much more of like, you know, we need to be sort of wearing our three-piece business suit and, you know, have our tie done correctly. And, you know, it's yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir.
Microsoft was optimized for Windows and Office and the consumer products like Works and things like that. But it just wasn't optimized for what we wanted to do. And so we created everything from scratch.
Which we didn't know how great it was to be under the radar.
Awesome.
It was awesome being under the radar. And we could do stuff and get away with stuff that groups like Office and Windows couldn't get away because they had to be much more tied to the corporate brand. Well, Dee Dee, she came up with this party called GeekFest, which Microsoft said you can't have a party called GeekFest. That's just so insulting to the developer community. And Dee Dee, like really knowing the developer community, said, well, they would love to be insulted kind of like they by us. So she came up with this party called GeekFest.
At that point in the industry, it was made up of like the power people who had their exclusive parties. And the guys who were the freaking backbone of the industry were never invited to those parties. It killed me. I was like, what the hell? Why do we have these exclusive parties? And like the developers, who they're the ones who are doing all the work and like they're the ones with all the creativity, they're not included. And so that was the vision behind the GeekFest, was it was the great equalizer.
But it was all cheap beer, lousy pizza, and cheesy giveaways. And so we would go steal stuff out of the storeroom.
That's the thing about GeekFest. You were always guaranteed to come away with a lot of stuff. And for some reason, people love that crap.
Yeah.
For GeekFest, the big deal was the limited edition t-shirts that we made in my garage. Everybody would fight for them.
There would be these t-shirts and they'd have handprints and black ink all over them. Or so like, it wasn't just that people wanted this GeekFest t-shirt. They wanted the one that had Dee Dee's handprint on it, or like the smudge, or
like
the,
like
the crappier the t-shirt, the better it was.
But they were literally handmade in my garage. Mm-hmm. And so they were limited edition. I mean, you didn't get more limited than that.
Visual Studio would never have gotten where it is today without the creation of a developer community. That was the magic, the success, the secret sauce that made us who we are.
Microsoft was definitely the leader in endearing the developer community and creating an ecosystem that helps in guidance, it helps in community. It's really a unique spot in Microsoft.
And the people that we worked with were so excited and passionate. And when we would enable them to, you know, like with the events and things like that, they responded so much. They loved it, and they were so appreciative of it. And so we were connecting with them in ways that no other corporation had ever done or ever tried to do. We had the passion, and the community had the passion, and you just brought it together, and it was electric.
Coming from politics, which I thought I was kind of like some in a little way changing the world or having impact on the world, and I thought I would never find that in a corporation, and I feel like I found that at Microsoft and in the developer division, that we really did, you know, change the world or help people change the world.
The big release between Visual Basic 2.0 and Visual Basic 4.0 was VB3, and VB3 offered 16-bit application development, where you could compile an application as an executable, which was a really big deal at the time.
I didn't touch Visual Basic until VB3, and I kind of lied my way through a job interview saying I had experience and this is a testament to VB, had a week to learn it on the job, and I did. And it's not because I'm a super genius, I am not. It's because VB was so good. Still is, but for that time, for the mid-90s, just so productive. It's so much done so quickly.
Customers are familiar with double-clicking an icon to run an application, and that's what we were able to do. We would create a compiled application that a customer could run. That was the unique new thing. Now, in VB4, that's when Windows 95 came out, and that's when 32-bit processing happened. And so now we can not only compile an application, but compile it to run in 32 bits, which was much, much faster.
Somewhere around there, we released Visual C++ 1.0, and it provided this visual design environment, the visual composition aspect for C++ customers. And we've seen over time that those two tools, Visual Basic and the Visual C++ tools, have gotten sort of closer in terms of the visual design abilities, and the languages themselves have evolved. You know, the object-oriented development capabilities that were in C++ started to migrate into Visual Basic.
What you had was you had a couple of products that were sort of at their peak. VB6 was widely loved and accepted. It was used in millions of applications by millions of developers. C++ 6.0 is widely considered to be sort of the best of all the C++ versions that have been done. I mean, you know, improvements have been attempted, but everybody seems to love that.
The guys got together and said, well, you know, we have a bunch of these separate development environments. We should put them together because customers are starting to use more and more tools. And our research showed us, we'd done a lot of research that said that something like 67 or 70% of developers used more than one language to build their application. So people were acquiring our products piecemeal. We said, well, let's bring them all together and sell in a single group.
Visual Studio was born of an idea that said that developers needed the aggregation of all those tools, Visual Basic, C++, FoxPro, Office Tools, as a suite. We thought that developers would want that integrated collection of software.
You know, it was around the time that, you know, you weren't buying Microsoft Word separately anymore, right? You were buying Microsoft Office. And the same thing with Visual Studio. I'm going to buy the suite of tools, whether I use them all or not, and it's easy to just buy them all in one package.
We named it Visual Studio because we thought of it as an artist's palette. You could look to your palette and find all the tools there. You could reach in and build high-performance applications or highly productive applications right there from the Visual Studio.
They didn't know anything about shipping the physical part of software. So they took each individual. They took FoxPro and VB and C++ and Visual Interdev and what the hell else was in there. There was a bunch of languages in there. And they literally taped them together, and you got this box this big. And it was shrink-wrapped. Oh, that's beautiful. God. Ah, oh, those are good days.
Visual Studio 97 was certainly not the best suite tool that we ever delivered.
Here's all the different products we offer, and we're going to duct tape them together and stick them in a box, and you're going to get this box all together at a discount.
When Visual Studio first shipped, it wasn't widely adopted at Microsoft. You know, humans have that old dogs and new tricks type of thing inherently, and you know, when I was working on a product team, I was teaching some of the most brilliant developers in the world. I mean, people to this day, I just did feel honored to work with. I was teaching them how to use Visual Studio, and they were whining and bitching and clawing and complaining because they would rather write code in Notepad. And I am sure there are still people at Microsoft that are allowed to do that.
The change between 97 and then the 98, the 5.0 to 6.0 product range, we started looking much more of how we could bring an integration together between things. So let's get to one IDE. Let's make things consistent.
Visual Studio 6.0 was the first integrated Visual Studio environment. So now we actually built an integrated setup so that the tools worked installed together as one set of applications and really designed to work together, a documentation set that worked integrated so that, you know, you had them all in one collection.
And I think the developer community responded to Visual Studio in the way that you would expect them to. They were saying, why is Microsoft forcing me to do this kind of thing? And that's the response anytime Microsoft changes anything, is why is Microsoft forcing me to do this thing? Why is Microsoft forcing me to make this change? Why is Microsoft taking my beloved product and moving it forward?
Back then, that install was brutal, and it was installing more software than we had hard disk space for. You couldn't fit it all, so you had to make intelligent decisions about what you're going to install, and you had to sacrifice like the documentation so you could get the freaking deployment bits for J++ in there, because God damn it, you know, one day you knew you were going to need that, and then going back, you couldn't go back, and it was brutal. It was still great, though.
The development community is remarkably consistent in their response, which is, don't change that, it's perfect.
After Visual Studio 6, we had a couple Visual Studio releases in a row, and then a couple more on a regular basis, 18 months about, and that's when we got spoiled. Frankly, we're spoiled. I mean, we're dependent on a new version of the tool.
Developers are never happier with a version of Visual Studio until it's superseded, and then the new version becomes the object of their hate as opposed to the previous version. it's easy to stereotype developers, them as being sort of the prototypical geek and nerd, but ultimately, what they are is they're very demanding craftsmen.
I first got started with Visual Studio, I guess, in 1997, where we sort of said, you know, what if we could do something, you know, that was fairly big and radical, that could kind of bring forward kind of our platform dramatically, and that was really kind of what led to .NET as well as Visual Studio .NET.
It's a big thing to say I'm going to introduce a brand new programming paradigm, and I'm going to convince all my developers to move over to it. That's hard. I mean, we did have systems. We had invested a lot in those systems, and, you know, they were functional and did the right thing. So, you know, I would say there was the normal kind of skepticism around starting a big new effort like that.
And for the website, we tried to figure out what was next. And the irony was, originally we thought, wow, there's nothing left to do. Everything's been done.
We had to make a lot of decisions around how we were going to serve a new set of developers. They were kind of moving off of perhaps writing a lot of C++, and they really needed a more modern kind of environment.
One of the things for us that was hard to figure out in the first .NET release was to try to figure out sort of how fast would the common language runtime be. You know, this concept of garbage collection in the mid-90s was fairly radical. And, you know, a common assumption back then was, you know, no server could do garbage collection.
With that, we knew we had to create something that broke a lot of new ground, that included things like, you know, automatic memory collection, things like that, where you didn't have to worry about COM and some overly technical pieces.
So for us with Visual Studio, and especially with .NET, you know, one of the things that we were trying to figure out is, you know, around 96, 97, 98 was this realization that, you know, it sounds trite now, the web is going to be big. And that was some of the genesis behind .NET and Visual Studio .NET, was to basically say we need to kind of radically bring forward you know, our platform as well as our tools to kind of take advantage of this new world.
This meeting we were having was about the web and the challenges we were having around the web. It was on a Friday afternoon. And we were up on the whiteboard and we were sketching out the things we needed to have in the next version of our product in order to be effective at building the next killer web application. So we're sketching these ideas out. It must have this, it must have that. And we all break at the end of Friday afternoon, and we committed to get back together again on Monday morning.
And so I kind of over, I think, Christmas 97, between 97 and 98, kind of prototyped the first version of ASP.NET.
Scott Guthrie walks in with what appears to be a fully functional version of Visual Studio that he wrote over the weekend that had most of the features that we described in this meeting.
And it was very simple, and, you know, it didn't do everything, and it used COM and JavaScript and C++ and a whole bunch of other things. But, you know, get kind of the fundamentals of building a page, having a component model, having kind of a security architecture and pipeline and a whole bunch of things.
And I was completely blown away because, you know, it took us years and years to build the Visual Studio that we had at the time, and Scott just cranked it out.
Well, our first web tool for Visual Studio was something called Visual InterDev. There were lots of issues in terms of performance, in terms of configuration and deployment. You know, a couple of the challenges were every time you actually rebuilt your COM objects, you actually had to stop and restart your web server. And so you manually had to reboot your web server on every compile. Which was obviously a pain. Debugging, you know, the debuggers, you couldn't actually set a breakpoint in your web page and then go into VB and actually step into it.
Keep in mind, back in 97, that was really like, okay, there's six of us, let's split it up. I think we need a garbage collector. I think we need a compiler. I think we need COM. Okay, great. We all went off and wrote one pagers in Word. This is what it would kind of look like. And then we went in and typed in the code. And then to actually, you know, okay, we would actually hop from office to office. Hey, here's my code, let's hook it up to yours, go back and forth. And, you know, so that's like really exciting to see a system come to life. That was a few million lines of code ago, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
We've sort of said at the end of the day, customer apps are going to be probably bigger or represent a bigger part of the code running than the actual framework that we're building. If we can't make our own framework run fast, then customer apps aren't going to run fast either. And so we made this big bet to build ASP.NET almost entirely in C#. And managed code. And that was very risky in the beginning. And we do perf numbers, and we'd have like, you know, 4 or 5 requests per second for Hello World. And you think, God, we're never going to be able to ship this thing. And then, you know, each week we'd kind of optimize and optimize and optimize and optimize, and we'd get up to 10 requests a second, and then 20 requests a second, and then 40 requests a second, and then 100 requests a second was a big time. And, you know, eventually we get up to thousands of requests per second.
And again, these are namespaces that today you just say, you know, system dot, you know, interop dot, you know, whatever. But we had to go create all that stuff from scratch. We did literally go type it all in.
There's lots of things that you take for granted, and you know, today when you program, like you can talk to the file system, you can do com interop, you can, you know, you can add two numbers together and get a result. And, you know, when you're in the early days like we were with .NET, you know, each of those things was a big milestone when those things finally worked.
It was amazing to watch the system just bootstrap, just being able to go in. And I remember the first day where we put the 50 of us in a room, and we actually showed the Fibonacci sequence, that little program, running with hard-coded IL, and it printed out the numbers on the screen, you know, which for a bunch of engine geeks was like, you know, wow, you know, standing out, that's just awesome.
I think the fun thing with the early days of .NET and VS were, you know, the fact that it was such a small group, and you knew everyone, and, you know, you could fit everyone in one room. You know, I remember the day that we could no longer fit everyone around one table was a big day. You know, it was like, wow, we need to get a bigger conference room. And, you know, now the project's bigger. There's a lot more people working on it. And, you know, so sometimes you miss the intimacy of, I know everyone's code by sight.